Thank you, Mitch. Thank you all for coming. The good news is your super shuttle will leave as scheduled. So, I also want to especially thank Gene and Boyd and Tom for helping organize this particular session. As I mentioned to Gene, I attended a session at Academy Health in Boston that I was privileged to hear Boyd and Tom speak at, and there weren't very many people in attendance at that session either, and I think it really belies the importance of this issue. So I was especially pleased to accept the role of kind of setting the stage for these three subject matters to address the issue of the demonstration to maintain independence and employment. I think it's a very innovative aspect of Medicaid health delivery. I think it's something that more people should be aware of, and I think the work that they're doing is extremely important in moving forward. I don't have any financial relationships with anybody in any language anywhere in the world. The conceptual basis for the demonstration to maintain independence in employment, when Gene first discussed this with me, I thought, okay, where do I start, and how do I really present kind of a bedrock for what they're going to be discussing later? Well, I thought I'd start by conceptualizing where disability-related legislation has been in the past. And as many of you know, if you ask anyone in the room, okay, what's the landmark piece of disability-related legislation? I don't think anybody would say Medicare or Medicaid. They'd say the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADAA amendments. And it really comes from more of a perspective of anti-discrimination, that people with disabilities deserve certain rights, there's a basis in social justice, and moving forward, people with disabilities should be receiving the same sort of opportunities that people without disabilities should in society. Now, DMIE, I think, is somewhat different in that it embraces, it's more of a social welfare program. I see it as that way. What do I mean by that particularly? Well, you're sort of looking at the intersection of employment, which is an economic construct, and health, which is a physical and cognitive construct, and disability, which I think to people who've really studied disability theory in the past is more of a social construct. And interestingly, many of these three circles very seldom intersect. Two of them frequently intersect. So there are programs that many of you can identify in Voc Rehab or elsewhere that relate to health and employment, disability and employment, disability and health, but very seldom are there programs like the DMIE that really run the intersection of these three broad areas within the even wider range of disability research. What do the numbers tell us when we try to hone in on this intersection of disability, health, and employment? Well, we can look at it from the perspective of SSA, Social Security Administration data. People with disabilities receiving supplemental security income, or SSDI, have increased. They've increased a lot, and they've increased even more since 2007, but it was over double from 85 to 2007. Disability can be costly. It should probably come as no surprise to anybody in this room that among people who receive SSI, people receive benefits, SSI pays out a lot in benefits. And this doesn't account for healthcare costs. Here are the healthcare costs. And these are usually the two numbers that most people talk about in terms of the spending paradox, that relatively few people in Medicaid, most of whom have disabilities, because they're duly eligible, they're both Medicaid and Medicare eligible, account for a disproportionate amount of the spending associated with Medicaid. Relatively few number of people with chronic conditions and disabilities account for a relatively disproportionately large number of the costs. So in terms of SSA, in terms of Medicare and Medicaid, people with disabilities can be very costly when they leave the workforce. Medicaid payments per enrollee, these may duplicate slides that you've seen elsewhere. This comes from the Kaiser Commission, which has an excellent online resource for this sort of stuff if you look at it more closely. Overall, $126 billion in 2007, not chump change. There's been some work that's been done on this. I had the privilege of working with Gene on this when I was at the University of Kansas. We looked at Medicaid buy-ins, ways, again, of engaging people with disabilities into the workforce. How can we get them into the workforce to be productive citizens? How can we save the state and the federal government money by doing it and improve quality of life in the process? By making employment a realistic and supportable option for really youth, but younger people with disabilities, I think is probably what we should have said. Medicaid buy-in programs have the potential to keep many citizens from becoming entrenched in what we characterize as the dependency experienced by many older SSI recipients and SSDI beneficiaries. So where did DMIE come from? This is TWEA. And again, for most of you in the room, you may have heard of this, the Ticket to Work Work Incentive Improvement Act of 1999. I'm not going to go over each of these, and I'm providing them to you as a resource if you want to download them from the APHA website when you get back home. So I'm not going to go over it in detail, but I will highlight this language: reduce dependency, enable and maintain employment, maintain Medicare coverage while working, and obtain and retain employment and reduce dependency on cash benefit programs. You get the intent by virtue of that type of language. Further in the TWEA, there's mention of potentially severe disability. So how do you set up a program to circumvent people with potentially severe disabilities from going into this so-called cycle of dependency, where they wind up being part of SSI and SSDI and receive large amounts of federal benefits? This is the actual language. Again, I have no intention of reading it. You can reference it from the website if you want to focus at it more intently. But this constitutes what TWEA feels is a worker with a potentially severe disability. TWEA authorized money to address this issue for states to take advantage of. A large amount of money, $250 million all told. How many states applied and how many were approved? Well, two jurisdictions applied to a 2002 solicitation, the District of Columbia and Mississippi. More recently, in 2006, persons who were working, there were four states funded, and you'll hear the results of that from our speakers in the panel: Hawaii, Kansas, Minnesota, Texas. Each of the programs was structured a bit differently, but again, looking at ways of circumventing people who were potentially eligible for Social Security Administration benefits and maintaining their place in the workforce. This seems like a good thing, so why didn't more states apply? Well, Louisiana applied, they were funded, but they had to withdraw in the face of Katrina. Iowa applied late, and I think after realizing that they only got $500,000 out of it, they withdrew also. There is a significant state match requirement. DMIE has set up only paid for administrative costs, and all the rest of the Medicaid costs still have to be shared by virtue of any services provided between states and the federal level. I mentioned disability advocacy priorities. I think it's clear that some state advocacy proponents were able to get this passed where other states may not have had that capacity in place. And of course, recognizing the problem. This was just last month, a little over a month ago, in the Washington Post, recognizing the problem. Well, this was just a month ago. And this made, I believe, the front page of the Washington Post. But it talks about pre-existing conditions, it talks about former workers, Social Security, and also the large increase of people on disability who are applying for benefits at the federal level. What it translates to is enormous federal expenses. Thanks, Mitch. So, major findings so far. Henry Iris gave an excellent overview at Academy of Health, which talked about primarily the process that DMIE can, in fact, be implemented if states have the will to do so. And building on existing programs makes identifying candidates easier from an existing pool from which to work. Again, I won't go over the detail, they'll be available online, but he went over the process and summarized them very nicely. I think what you'll be hearing from Boyd and Tom and Gene are results from Texas, Minnesota, which talk about early outcomes. And in the way of summarizing them, I feel that setting the plate really asks these questions. Does the demonstration to maintain independence and employment provide the type of health insurance that persons with complex medical conditions or disabilities need to optimize their health and retain their employability? And does DMIE contribute to improved health or quality of life for people with disabilities? In terms of the economics, does it really save money? And that's really the bottom line. So I appreciate it. I'm going to have to apologize in advance. I think after Gene's presentation, I'm going to have to run to catch my super show. So I'll be filtering out here after some of our other speakers finish their remarks. Thank you.